everybody, to the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. Tonight, chaos ensues. We are doing our first ever episode of Unscripted Chaos, where we all have individual agendas and topics. Doug always has a different agenda, but that's just because he's an enemy to the show. But we all have different things to talk about here. We're going to start off with Doug, who's going to yap about WCW 1992 for a half hour. And he's going to give us a little history lesson, talk about all the champions, the big rivalries, the big segments. He's really going to set up the territory for us and tell us about all the ins and outs of WCW 1992. And if he sucks, we'll throw tomatoes at him. And then I'm going to do my top 10 underdogs of all time, which is the little guys, the fat guys, the underdogs in pro wrestling. An underdog story is most everybody's favorite story, right, Doug?
Yeah. I'm just glad you're going to throw tomatoes at me and not feces, like usual.
Well, I didn't tell you what was in the tomatoes. But, and then Eric's going to book WrestleMania in his own light. He's going to take all the cards he has, all the matches we know is on the card, and he's going to put them into a night one and a night two, and he's going to book WrestleMania. Have you been preparing, Eric?
Yep.
Good.
Yes.
We'll get all into that very soon. And then at the end of the night, we're going to be doing our Hall of Fame nominations, where me, Doug, and Eric all say everybody who we want in the unscripted, in this year's Unscripted Hall of Fame, and then we're going to put them in the Wrestling Through the Years group, and people are going to vote on the class.
Yes.
So that's what we're doing.
We're giving out one each?
No, we're giving out a guy, a girl, a manager, a tag team, and then three extras.
Yes. That's right.
And it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll do that at the end. So before not too long, let's get into it. Doug, tell us a little bit about WCW 1992.
All right. So we'll start with the tagline that it sucked. But
if you think I'm holding this the whole time, you're crazy.
Well, give me this thing. You know, you've been awake for an hour and a half. All right. You should start being sunshine.
I've been a bald idiot for like 20 years.
18. I started losing my hair when I was 20. I don't know. Anyway, hard to keep track. All right, WCW 1992. So it's a year that started. They fired Jim Herd at the end of 91. At the beginning of 92, a gentleman by the name of K. Allen Fry, friends called him Kip, takes over WCW, and what he does is the first thing he does at the January Clash of Champions, which actually emanated from I didn't even remember where the hell it was from, but the January Clash of Champions, they did a K. Allen Fry comes out. First thing he does, and it's the worst thing he could have ever done, is he announces that Jesse Ventura is the new color commentator for WCW. After he does that, he announces that Lex Luger and Sting are going to wrestle at Super Brawl. So that basically, that's going to set up Luger and Sting is going to be the main event for the February pay-per-view. And then which was going to be on February 29th, 1992. Also, you had the Dangerous Alliance, which was the top heel faction there.
And that's Paul E. doing his thing, right?
Yeah. Paul E., Rick Rude, Stunning Steve Austin, Arn Anderson, Larry Zbysko, and Beautiful Bobby. Beautiful Bobby and Arn Anderson won the WCW Tag Team titles on the 16th of January in Jacksonville, Florida. So they're the tag champs. Steve Austin's the television champion. Rick Rude's the United States champion. Larry Zbysko is just known as the Cruncher, and they also have Medusa in their corner. So they spent a lot of the year feuding with the top babyfaces. Also, one of the big programs or one of the big matches heading into Super Brawl II was Flying Brian and Jushin Thunder Liger for the WCW light heavyweight title. And that was going to be that was going to be the opening match of the show.
And just to include a couple questions here for Doug's history lesson. And by the way, you're going to be doing very many of these. Sorry, I thought that was going to be smoother. We're going to be doing very many of these history lessons, right?
Yeah.
I want to add in some questions. I'm going to give Eric the opportunity to. I'm sure he won't have that many good ones, but he's going to try. Do you think the Dangerous Alliance is one of the more unsung heel stables in history?
I think when the group was put together, it was pretty much because that was such a dark time for the company. But I think it was one of the bright spots because they did feud with a lot of the top guys. Like they feuded with Sting, they feuded with the Steiners, Steamboat, Barry Windham, Dustin Rhodes, Ron Simmons a little bit. So I do think that they did accomplish a lot in the short time that they were together. Because a lot of those guys, like Zbyszko was kicked out of the group, I think, in May of 92. And then, like, you know, Paulie Dangerously had a falling out with Medusa because he decided he didn't like women. Or he finally admitted it anyway. And Rick Rude would rather have Medusa in his corner than Paulie Dangerously because Medusa was better looking. But that would be later on in the year. But to answer your question, yes, they were definitely like one of the bright spots of WCW television.
Yeah, because my big thing here is, and I hope that you can get into it by the end of the history lesson, but this feels like one of the better talent rosters I've ever seen. And we've felt like that a while, and there's other people that have said that, but also you got Rick comes in 92 at some point. I think that's later on though, right?
Flair?
Yeah, or is it not until 93? Okay. But 92, you have Simmons, right? You have Lex. You have Sting. You have a good foundation. You have tag teams. You have the Dangerous Alliance. You have.
Well, Lex leaves in Super Brawl 2 is his last match.
Okay.
So, but also, too, what's funny about that is Sting worked all the, like, house shows and all that and all the TVs. Lex Luger worked one contractual match that he was supposed to have at the Tokyo Dome in January of 92. And then after that, he basically...
So Lex is kind of a non-factor in 92.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he had, like, a year left in his contract, but he saw that the company was going nowhere. So he's like, fuck it, I'm out. So he left in February and joined the WBF. So, yeah, he was a non-factor. But you had guys like Cactus Jack. You had Flying Brian. You had a lot of these.
Abdullah.
You had Abdullah for a little bit. I mean, he would leave in mid-92.
So it seems like there was a lot of fluctuation.
There was a lot of fluctuation, especially when Watts came in the summer of 92. And he would bring in a lot of guys with him because he brought in a lot of his guys that he felt like could draw, like his Mid-South guys, because he was taking things like, you know, they say he took wrestling backwards.
Yeah. Because the little thing, and the things that I remember, even from watching the DVDs, the WWE DVD, or the DVD the WWE produced when I was a young fella, stuff like jumping off the top rope, and if you go over the top rope, it's a disqualification, right?
Well, which had been a rule anyway.
Okay, but
the jumping off the top rope rule, that was the thing, because you had a light heavyweight division and you had a bunch of guys whose move was to jump off the top rope,
and then he made it to where you can't do it anymore. That is kind of crazy.
Yeah. Flying Brian, Ricky Steamboat, Beautiful Bobby, Jushin Thunder Liger, several others. Vader, because he would come off with a splash.
And that was illegal now?
Yeah. That would be illegal. This would be July of, or June of 92 when he would come in. Because he, he basically, and a lot of the talent roster would fluctuate because he came in and right away, or like in July of 92, he fired Terry Taylor. He fired Jimmy Garvin.
The one thing I do like that he did as in terms of that is taking away the mats, the padding on the outside,
yeah,
and just having concrete. I think there is an added level of realism and coolness to that.
Right, because that's what they did in Mid-South.
Yeah, and that's the, like, the gritty, like, wrestling show, like, not independent, but that it gives that territory feel. That's cool. I like that. If you're not WWE, like, AEW should do that. If you're not WWE, you should do that.
Right.
To be different. Even though it's cool to have padding and stuff, but fuck that, we're tough guys.
Right. And, you know, another thing that they did was Watts came in, and when he came in, he eliminated the U.S. Tag Team title, but he brought in all the NWA World title because they were going to work more with the NWA again. They brought in the NWA Tag Titles. Steve Williams and Terry Gordy came in. But to kind of rewind a little bit and go back to Super Brawl, Flying Brian and Jushin Liger was considered probably one of the best matches of 92.
Really?
Yeah. So the WCW Light Heavyweight title, you know, Pillman wins it back. You know, Sting won the world title that night too. And there was a lot of good action that night, you know. At one point, the one thing I didn't like at the beginning of the year, which is in February of 92, is the reintroduction in the WCW of a guy who I still think is completely useless, and that's Greg the Hammer Valentine. Comes in as Terry Taylor's tag team partner because the York Foundation had split, and Taylor was now known as the Taylor-made man. They brought in Greg Valentine. They win the U.S. tag titles for a while, and Greg Valentine... And what bugged me about Valentine is the fact that, like, he didn't sell. And if you ask him, hey, we need you to do a job to put somebody over, his answer would be, he quit WCW in, like, October of 92 because they said, hey, we're going to have you job to Sting on, or we're going to have you go, we need you to put Sting over on television. Okay, I quit. And they're like, Sting's our biggest star. He goes, am I going to jump him after? Is this going to be a program? No. Like, you're lower mid-card. You're like, we need you to do a job for Sting.
He had an ego on him?
Yeah. Greg Valentine.
And he sucked.
Yeah. Greg the Hammer Valentine's a piece of shit.
Okay. He's a legend, though.
Well, he's a legendary piece of shit. Because, and he is probably one of the most overrated assholes.
To me, he always looked like a female gym teacher.
Yeah.
Like if you were to think of what a woman gym teacher looks like.
I think you, at one time when we went to a convention and met him in the honky-tonk, man, you looked at me and said, he looks like a miserable Dutch woman.
That too. But I like his work, and of course, like the match with Piper.
The dog collar match with Piper was good. There was some stuff, it was just here, he was just...
I liked Rhythm and Blues too.
His stuff here, he was just way past his prime.
Yeah, it was crazy. The fact that he was working in the, like, 96 was nuts to me.
Yeah.
But, I mean... He should have been jabbing for Sting. And that sucks because him and Sting could have been a really good affair. But he fucked that up. What'd you break?
Something in your spell, I believe. I just don't know what the hell it was.
Yeah, fuck it. But there you go. But Greg Valentine... It's not like he would make WCW better this time.
No, not at all. I mean, his tag team with Taylor was pretty good, and they had a pretty good match at the WrestleWar pay-per-view in May of 92 when they took on the Freebirds and put the Freebirds over. Of course, Taylor took the fall because you're not going to have Valentine
It's crazy to me that this, like, because overall, is it overall the business kind of not doing great as a whole, or is WWE still kind of hot?
They're not doing that great. They're doing good overseas.
Yeah.
Like, they had a really successful European tour. The issue with them was the steroid scandal.
Yeah.
Like, Vince was getting nailed for the steroid scandal. They kept talking about it. And then the WBF happened and the World Bodybuilding Federation. And that was a flop. And then you had guys, you know, that were there for a while that decided they were going to leave because Vince was trying to usher in, like, a new generation.
Yeah.
So it was a rough time for the
business.
For me, it was fun to watch because I just remember watching a lot of that stuff on Saturday mornings. Also in 92, we had a guy come in with a new gimmick. He was known as Oz. Then he became known as Vinny Vegas. That's Kevin Nash. Started wrestling as Vinny Vegas. You had other guys kind of coming in and coming out. And then, you know, the War Games match at WrestleWar 92. The Dangerous Alliance, you know, Rude, Austin, Eaton, Anderson, and Zbyszko taking on Sting Squadron, which was Sting, Nikita Koloff, Barry Windham, Dustin Rhodes, and Ricky Steamboat. And then that's actually because Zbyszko accidentally hit Eaton with an exposed turnbuckle or whatever. They kicked Zbyszko out of the Dangerous Alliance.
Yeah, Zbyszko had to go, though. I liked the Dangerous Alliance. I thought they were a good, like, mid-card level towards. Well, I mean, they were kind of made of head, too, with Rick Rude.
Mainly Rick Rude, yeah.
Because that's what interests me about this time period is because the stars you had on top were still, like, good, recognizable names. Like, Rick Rude was a big deal in WWE.
He was a big deal in WWE, and like when he came into WCW, he came in as a WCW Halloween Phantom at Halloween Havoc 91, and automatically they were pairing him and Sting together,
yeah.
You know, against one another. And it worked, because Rude was the ultimate heel.
Yeah, you got to do that. Yeah, of course. And him and Sting work together. And that's the thing, because you had a young, and that's what I like about this time period, is you had a young, if they had good, to me it always falls down to the management sucked.
Yeah.
And no offense to Bill Watts, because he ran probably one of the best territories of all time.
Yeah, he wasn't good here. See, the funny thing is that Jim Herd was an asshole who had no idea what the hell he was doing.
Yeah.
Kay Allen Fry was the nicest guy in the world. But he had no idea what the hell he was doing. And Bill Watts was just an old fart who had no idea what he was doing.
I think people were kind of losing interest, too. Same thing with WWF. Because, like, 93 and 94, that's when everybody starts suffering.
Yes, because it's more of a... Because you really didn't have Hogan anymore.
Yeah, and also, like, I think that just... The love of that just was kind of like peaked for a lot of kids. A lot of those kids were growing up.
Yeah.
And the kids below them didn't give as much of a shit as that about that. And then it took the Attitude Era to really get people back on board.
Yeah. It was funny to me because I've actually had conversations with people where they tell me that they started not watching wrestling anymore when the Ultimate Warrior took over from Hogan.
Yeah.
So I think that's when a lot of people's interest kind of waned away, too. But, like, you still had Hogan kind of on top. But then, like, when he disappeared altogether, it's just like, okay, we really don't need to watch anymore.
92, you had Hogan and Flair in the same building, though.
Yeah, which they fumbled that. I mean, we still got Flair and Savage,
which is a better match. But Hogan and Flair, they tried. If you try it in the Garden, it doesn't work. What are you going to do?
Right, and I understand that. I mean, I personally think that Flair and Savage should have main evented at WrestleMania, especially since they were for the title.
I do think a WrestleMania buy rate, that would have went up the roof, though. Because
yeah.
I think the people in the South that remembered seeing Ric Flair all over the country would be like, okay.
Yeah.
And then Hulk.
Because
to me, that's like wrestling's version of South versus North almost. Like New York, fucking, like East Coast versus whatever. Because New York, like, Hogan was always that guy. And the territory started in New York. And they kind of went global with Hogan. But the South was always in Carolina. And all those territories, obviously, were Flair's, where he did 10,000 crowds and stuff like that. So you could have got a good buy rate out of that match, I think, at WrestleMania. I get that it didn't work live, but...
Yeah, and when something starts to not work live, and then I think Hogan started telling people, hey, I'm going to take a break a little bit. I want to go to Hollywood. So it's not like they're going to have Hogan beat Flair for the title.
Yeah, and you can't have Flair win at WrestleMania.
Yeah. I mean, unless they did it second to last match.
But they're the main event.
Yeah.
Can't have Hogan and Flair not be the main event.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Like, Flair and Savage you could get away with because Hogan basically runs the company and he won't let Savage have a moment.
That should have been the main event.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, one of my long-time theories, and I don't know if this is actually true or not, was I personally think that Flair and Savage was supposed to go on last, but... And Hogan, I actually think that that Justice, originally they were going to have Justice go over Hogan to get him ready for the Warrior. But then they would have had that in the middle of the card, and they would have had Flair and Savage main event. But then I think Hogan basically got to the point where it's just like, no, one, I'm going over, and two, I'm going on last. So, I mean, that's just like one of the theories that I have. But getting back to WCW 92, the emergence of a man by the name of Ron Simmons. And he wins the world title August 2nd, 1992 in Baltimore from Vader. Vader had to take a few weeks off because he had to get his knee scoped. So they give the title to Ron. That's also the same night Jake the Snake Roberts debuts for the company, and that was a fucking clusterfuck. Jake Roberts leaves the WWF, and then. After he leaves the WWF, he goes into WCW. They agree on money. They agree that he's going to be that he's going to work closely with Dusty on the booking, okay, and all that. But he had a no compete, so he had to wait a few months. Well, unfortunately, Bill Watts got to the company before he did. Yeah.
So Watts cut out the booking, said, "No, you're not going to book because I can't trust you, so you're not going to work with me. And the money that we're going to pay you, you ain't worth it." So they knocked him down a considerable amount. So when Jake got there, he's just like, all right, well, I ain't staying here long.
Yeah.
So Watts fucked that up.
100%.
Yeah. I thought there was a lot of things that that they had going right in the company. You had Ron Simmons, and you had Sting, who's a face of the company. They were really, you could tell that they had Sting, and you had a bunch of good heels for him to work with. Like, you had a Cactus. Jake coming in was good. Jake in WCW is a weird experiment, and the fact that it didn't work is always crazy to me. Because I thought he could have been one of those older WWE guys that came in and killed it.
It's more the fact that Watts wouldn't let it work.
Yeah. Because it could have been special, it feels like.
Yeah. And I think it would, because who knows what he would have done.
Him and Sting just seems like a perfect pairing.
Yeah.
And they tried to do it while he was there.
Yeah, and it didn't...
I have a question.
Go ahead, Eric.
What was your favorite feud or storyline in 1992?
Favorite feud definitely would have to be Sting and the Dangerous Alliance. Because they would always... that was at the beginning. Later on, it would definitely be Sting and Vader, because I always thought they had really good matches.
I go Cactus Vader, unless that was...
That was 93.
Then fucking Cactus and Abdullah as partners.
That was good. And, like, what was weird was that, like, they had that on-again, off-again relationship, and then, you know, they were going to go back to being partners, but then, you know, in June of 92, they get to the Omni in Atlanta. Everybody gets their booking sheets or whatever, and everybody goes and sees the board, and Abdullah finds out he's going to work with he's going to work with Dustin Rhodes, and he's going to put he's scheduled to put Dustin over.
Yeah.
Well, he went to Dusty and said, "I like you, but your kid ain't worth it. I quit," and he left.
He left?
Yeah, he quit because he didn't want to put over Dustin.
Who's this?
Abdullah.
What a dickhead.
Yeah.
This is the man.
Yeah, it was just, it was fucked up.
This is fucked up.
So.
I mean, I know, again, it would be hard to believable, I guess, but
yeah.
Still. Sting and Cactus is good.
Oh, it's definitely good, because Cactus was more of like a bounty hunter.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
But, and then, like, you had certain guys that were, you know, like I said, coming in, coming out. You know, Steiner Brothers left sometime in 92 because Bill Watts wanted to break them up. He broke them up. Like, he took Rick off TV for a while. He had Scott beat Ricky Steamboat for the TV title. And he's like, "All right, guys, you're going to break up. Scotty, you're going to go heel." And Scott Steiner told him to go fuck himself. And then they negotiated and got themselves in the WWF. So Watts said to Scott Steiner, he goes, "All right, you're leaving. Give me the fucking belt back."
Yeah.
And this is according to Teddy Long. Teddy Long said that Bill Watts, because a lot of people would, a lot of people hated his guts, he would carry a gun on him. So, like, if somebody actually went up to him, he'd just threaten them with a gun.
Yeah.
He went to threaten Scotty with the gun to get his fucking belt back. Well, Scott Steiner brought, he had a pet pit bull named Arnold. And Arnold always watched over Scotty's bag. So if somebody came near Scotty's bag, Arnie would, go to bite him. So Watts is just like, "All right, Scott, I want the fucking belt bag." He goes, "It's in my bag. Go get it. Just good luck keeping your fingers with Arnold."
That's funny.
Yeah. So, then towards like the end of the year, they did the Starcade thing again. They had Great Muta win the battle. No, thank you. They had Great Muta win the Battle Bowl Battle Royal that year. And Ricky Steamboat and Shane Douglas were the tag champions towards the end of the year. On December 30th, 1992, Vader won the title back from Ron Simmons. But, yeah, it was, that was quite the year. I mean, great talent roster, just idiots in charge.
All right. Is that your final piece?
Yeah, because I've done my half.
You sure? I know it's been a half hour, but do you have more to talk about or what?
No.
Okay. Because there's some stuff that's better left unsaid.
All right. Well, I'll dive into my top 10 under. My hot dogs?
I said good job, Doug.
Oh, good job, Doug. I thought he said hot dogs. Yeah, you did a really
good Friday.
You did a really good job, Dougie Wuggy, head of bear.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Now we have my top 10 underdog list. Yeah, you peeking bitch. All right.
Just because I peek in on you in the shower.
That's weird.
Yeah.
A weird fella. Yeah. Top 10 underdogs in wrestling, which underdogs in wrestling is important, especially for a really good baby face. So you ready to get into it?
Yeah, I can't wait to hear this list.
Yes, sir.
All right. I got three honorable mentions. Mikey Whipwreck.
He's definitely been mentioned. Buffalo Guy.
Buffalo Guy, Mikey Whipwreck. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. And somebody else. All right, you ready for the list?
Yeah. So you don't have a third honorable mention?
No, I have two.
Okay.
Is that all right, Dougie Wuggy?
Well, you said three. I just don't want them to be in the calls every time.
No, I didn't. You said two, and I said five, and then we both said eight. All right, number 10. You ready?
Yeah.
Eat your jelly bean shirt. Zach Gowen. The one-legged wonder, baby.
Yeah. I don't know what the hell they were thinking when they brought him in.
Hey, he was a good underdog. Especially going against Vince. That match with Big Show, with him and Stephanie, I thought was very entertaining. And I think they thought that the Zach Gowen experiment failed, but I think it actually succeeded. And he had a good theme song, and I think he was over, and I think people wanted to see him overcome adversity.
I mean, yeah. The issue with him is, and he can't help it that he only had one leg. But only having one leg, like, you really can't do much. Like, you can't lift a guy for a suplex. You can't slam a guy.
He did a couple suplexes, snap suplexes.
Did he?
I think so.
So like,
he did a lot of moonsaults.
Like, your moveset is limited.
Yeah.
And again, that's not necessarily his fault. But I feel like the WWE was kind of just going for, because Vince was playing such a piece of shit on TV of who knew that art would imitate life.
Yeah.
That like he... like the fact that he garnered a lot of sympathy for Zach Gowen for the way he treated him.
Yeah, I thought it worked, and I liked their street fight. I just thought the wrong guy won. Because didn't Vince go over?
Yeah.
I think Zach probably should have won, but...
I think Vince shouldn't have done a lot of things, but...
And I like Zach's little feud with Matt Hardy, too.
Yeah, the feud that were like... Because Matt Hardy lost to Zach Gowen at the one pay-per-view, Matt Hardy decided he was going to leave SmackDown.
Yeah, I thought he was a good worker for having one leg, and I thought he was a good underdog that you wanted to root for. I remember watching as a kid and rooting for Zach Gowen.
Yeah. I mean, and Brock Lesnar just beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, Brock Lesnar nearly killed him. All right, next up. Daniel Bryan.
Eric?
I love it. Thank you.
He is one of the better underdog stories in recent history. You watched WrestleMania fucking whatever, 30.
Yeah.
And were super excited when he won the title. I was right there with you. So you can eat a big bag.
You weren't living out here yet.
You were at home, you cocksucker.
No,
yeah, you were. No, you came down home for that one.
Sorry,
and I remember watching it with you. And
you
were excited.
With Kenny Lee.
Bullshit. You were excited. You were down home and we were watching it. And you were having fun. And listen, Daniel Bryan was a great underdog story that year.
That year, yes. Since then, it was one of the better underdog stories, I'll give you that.
Yes! Yes!
Can't stand it.
You're jelly beans.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of the, I guess you could say he's one of the best underdogs. I would much rather put him on an overrated list.
We can't shit on him every fucking episode. The guy had one of the best stories, and it was the fans that made it happen.
Well, yeah.
It's kind of like Cody, but I wouldn't call Cody an underdog.
No, because Cody can do more than just kick somebody.
All right. Well, Eric, at least you and me are logical.
Yep.
I agree with Doug.
I know. I know. So
you'll probably go
Doug didn't piss me off.
What did he say?
He did it to pick me off.
Who pisses him off?
No, I'm saying Doug hates Brian Danielson to piss me off.
Yeah, I agree. It pisses me off, too. But, you know, everybody has to have an opinion. And...
yeah.
No, I just like to message Doug.
Yeah, I mean, well... here's the thing, and I get people are fans of him, and if you're a fan of him, that's all well and good. And yes, the WrestleMania story was well built, because this is actually one of the things in the last 10 years Triple H has not fucked up. All right, because Triple H actually did the job for him, and like there was a really good story leading into WrestleMania. Is he good? No. Daniel Bryan sucks because he's overrated. I never understood that, but because I'm a fan of babyface,
he's a very good babyface.
When he did that run, he was a very good babyface. But then after a while, the whole thing where WWE didn't want him to get on, like he could have worked in 2016, 2017, whatever it was, that 2 years he was retired, he could have worked if he wanted to. But the problem is WWE did not want him to get over anymore. They made up that whole fucking retirement thing. They probably paid off the doctor to say, hey, look, your neck is bad.
There was two different angles that he was a part of that I really enjoyed. That, and I really liked the wooden belt thing.
Yeah.
The hemp belt.
Well, yeah, because he was a heel there and he played the heel role perfectly.
But I thought it was a really good from underneath baby face that was going against two giants of the sport, Randy Orton and Batista. It's one of the better WrestleMania fairy tales ever told. Hopefully this year tops it, and I think it's going to. But
yep.
That was a good story. You can't leave him off an underdog list is all I'm saying, in my view, whether you hate him or not.
Yeah, and that's fine because this is your list. I just, if I made up an underdog's list, I wouldn't put him on.
That's fair.
All right. Next up, we have Sami Zayn.
He's an underdog in the sense that he's one of those guys nobody wanted to get over.
Yeah, but also, like him going against Roman Reigns, he's an underdog. And you wanted to see him like he was the common man kind of, and people want to romanticize Cody in the story and how everybody wanted him to win last year. It wasn't always the case. A lot of the Smart Mark fans were preferring Sammy,
and because it was so hot, and they knew that if Sammy were to lose the Roman, it would kill the momentum off a little bit.
It didn't though, because then the tag match was a spectacle.
They had the tag titles. So, no, Sammy's momentum didn't get killed, and
I just worry because I don't – there's no inkling that – there's no, like, hint or whatever that WWE could be – that WWE is planning on ending Gunther's reign.
It's been going for a long time, though.
We'll get to that, too.
So I just worry that, like – because I feel like Sammy would have been able to do so much more. The issue is that he only does what the company lets him.
Yeah, but – and his heel run was interesting, but I think he's better as a – like a baby face, like an underdog baby face that you think is probably going to get his ass kicked. And just like the Walter match, he's an underdog in that match. But that's why you want to root for it. That's what makes that match interesting.
Yeah.
Because any other guy, you know Walter's going to win, but you there's something in the back of my head and everybody else's head that says Sammy might do it. And that's fun. That's what makes professional wrestling good.
Yeah. Oh, no, I want him to do it.
Exactly. And that's what makes him a good underdog.
Yeah.
Hopefully you agree with one of these picks soon. Next up.
I agree with Sami Zayn. I think he should be on the list.
There you go. All right.
I agree, too. He's one of my favorites.
Number seven, we have Tommy Dreamer.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Because he knew he could garner sympathy. And when they wanted him to win the ECW title in 2000, and he's like, no, it'll kill my character. Like, because I'm supposed to be the guy that comes close but doesn't do it.
Yeah.
And they're like, Tommy, you deserve this moment. He goes, even if I do, I don't want it.
It was nice when he finally got it in WWE, though.
Yeah. But because he believed in that gimmick and he really played that underdog character really well.
Yeah. Well, because he understood the art of losing. That's the thing about Tommy Dreamer that's interesting. Is that he's like he's the least selfish guy of all time. He's always cool with having somebody go over because he thinks it means more.
Yeah.
So the fact that Tommy loses a bunch, when Tommy finally gets one, you get very excited. Oh, my other honorable mention was Barry Horowitz.
He's definitely an underdog. I'm sure a certain person will be licking in between his cheeks later on when we do the Hall of Fame nomination.
Yeah, you do get like that sometimes. Tommy Dreamer. But so when you got a career that this guy loses all the time, but when he gets one, it's very exciting. That makes him an underdog. And that's what's fun. And even in WWE, when ECWE fucking blew in a lot of people's eyes, there's episodes I really enjoy, but a lot of people think that you should burn it on fire and take a shit on it.
Yeah.
But I thought that Tommy Dreamer's title win meant that much more. When he won the title in WWE, finally, it was a magical moment. And even when he retired, it did kind of make Zack Ryder a little bit.
It did. And what's funny, too, is you mentioned that WWE-ECW run. I remember an episode because him and Sandman for a while were feuding with Mike Knox and Test.
Yeah.
And there was an episode where it was Tori Wilson and Kelly Kelly in a bikini contest. Perfect thing to have on at 10 o'clock at night when all the kids go to bed. When there's nothing on Cinemax. And so...
Oh, my God.
So they did that, but then Knox and Tess come out and say, hey, Kelly's not going to, she's not going to disrobe, no bikini contest, whatever. Sandman and Dreamer come out, and Sandman's like, all right, 3-on-3 right here, right now. And Tommy Dreamer pins Mike Knox, and he got so excited because they weren't able to pin Mike Knox and Test, like, at all. Like, they had a couple of tag matches against them, and Paul Heyman and his security guards were making sure that Test and Knox won. So finally they got that win. And it was like a big win for him. And it completely killed Mike Knox's push.
And also made Test want to stop teaming with him. So, but yeah, no, that's, as far as Tommy Dreamer goes, like, that's, like, every time he was able to get a big win after he couldn't beat a guy a couple of times, it was like, it was always like he won a world title.
Yeah, that's what makes him and Raven one of the better storylines of ECW history.
Yeah.
It's because you had that element to it, that Tommy can't beat him. But when he finally did, it meant that much more. And that's, like, cool long-term booking in a different sense. So, all right, you ready for the next up?
Sure.
Number six, if you will.
Yeah.
We have an AEW selection. I have, well, you might like this one. You rolled your eyes, but Darby Allin.
I do like that one.
You nutsack. I thought Darby was, from the beginning, he's just got that potential. He's a tiny fella.
Yeah.
And he throws himself around like a fucking rag doll. So, and he always is going through glass and tables and shit that's on fire. So you're going to feel bad for that guy after a while. He's kind of like, a lot of people would probably say Jeff Hardy was an underdog. I really wouldn't, but I would put Darby in that because he's just, there's an element that put your body on the line, and I'll get to that later on in the list. But putting your body on the line and also just being kind of small in stature, I would say that's what makes him an underdog. You never know if Darby's going to get it.
And he's had so many cool moments because he was that underdog.
Yeah.
And the thing about, you know, and stuff happens, you know, he wanted to go as an underdog, you know, he didn't think he'd be able to do, or people didn't think he'd be able to do the Mount Everest climb, and he wanted to do it so bad, but because he still had 1 week left on his contract, or 1 week left where he still had to work, Tony Khan's like, all right, well, you're going to do one more match, and he breaks his fucking foot, so now he can't go fucking climb Mount Everest.
It was on purpose. Tony told Jay White, he's like, get him.
Yeah, he's like, I don't want to lose him for a fucking, like, because there's
Sting just put his ass over to fucking, we're not letting them go.
Yeah, like, he just got a good moment with Sting where, like, we don't want him to fucking leave, like, because there's no, we don't even know if he'll come back alive.
Yeah.
So,
which is crazy to me that he said on TV that he was going to Mount Everest. Then when he couldn't go, when he injured his foot, they booked an injury angle, too, to write him off of TV.
Yeah.
And to write him off of when he already, like, said he was going to go. Like, before he broke his foot, they wrote him off TV.
Well, because he broke his foot in the match.
Oh, okay.
He broke his foot in the match with Jay White.
But didn't they, like, they do an injury angle right after the match?
Right after the match.
And they didn't know his foot was broken.
No, he said, I broke my fucking foot.
So that's why they did the injury angle?
He told Jay, he's just like, we got a problem. Jay's like, what's the problem? He goes, I broke my foot. He goes, all right. So then that's when they booked the angle, like, right after. Darby basically called the spot in the middle of the ring. He's like, just take me out.
If he's going away anyway, though, who gives a fuck?
Well, because then they had to write off. They had to explain
why he's not going to Mount Everest.
Why he couldn't do the climb.
What, you think they were going to bring a production crew with him?
No, but knowing how proud of a guy Darby is,
yeah,
I don't think they were going to bring a production crew or whatever. But I mean, they could have, but. In the movie Mr. Deeds, what mountain was Preston Blake climbing at the
I don't fucking
at the beginning
know.
Of the movie?
I don't know.
What was it? I'm almost thinking it was Mount Everest, but I'm not sure. I mean, bad example because he died at the beginning.
You've been a big fan of that movie, huh?
Yeah.
Darby Allin's a good underdog. Do you agree, Eric?
Yes, definitely. He's one of my favorites in AEW too. Thanks. Okay,
I agree with that, too.
So far, I like your list.
Thanks,
love
Eric. He loves it. Dog. He's really going to love it now. Because 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. My number 5 is Bailey.
Oh, I love it.
How many times do you think he's creamed all over his iPad since you started this list?
My God.
To me, these people are good underdogs, though. I'm not doing it for Eric. I did it for the culture. And I think that Bayley is a great underdog. She's a really good heel now, but even she's proven with this angle with damage control. She's good when you have three people going against her.
Yeah, and yep. What's funny about her is...
Poor people.
She was always, you know, she was always good as that underdog baby face, and people cared, like, when she won.
Yeah.
And now, like, if she's able to beat EO at WrestleMania, which I don't know if that's the plan or not, but if she's able to it, like, that's going to be a huge reaction.
Yeah.
And I bet Eric is hoping that that match is on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
To me, it's got to be the plan, right?
What, her winning?
Yeah.
You would think, unless they feel like they could get more out of EO as champion with, with damage control, with damage control in the corner. I almost said the cast of the Asian Facts of Life.
You just did say that.
Yeah.
You just did.
Well, to be honest with you, like, if they did recast the Facts of Life in you know, Japan or whatever, they would probably all get the role.
Yeah.
Dakota Kai can be Mrs. Garrett.
I like damage control. I find them funny and adorable. I like Kairi Sane a lot.
Kairi Sane is good. Asuka is just, for an old one, she is, because she's like 45.
Yeah.
Is she really?
Yeah.
She's got great skin.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she is still like, oh my God. If she retired and did adult films, I'd search her a lot on anyway.
Jesus Christ. I also think she I didn't know it was taking that turn. She is, to me, and she's by far the best of all the women in the group, including Bayley.
Oh, yeah.
Really, Asian Facts of Life, and you didn't think I'd go farther than that?
No. I thought, but honestly, I think Asuka's the best worker.
Yeah.
And she's been, like, one of the best for a long time.
The thing is that, like, Io Sky is just, like, she thinks she has this demanding presence, but it's just like, to me, she's the weakest three.
You think so?
Yeah.
I'd agree. She is good, though. She's been a good champion. She's good in the ring. I like Kairi's style better, and I think Asuka's, like, by far the best.
Yeah.
Dakota Kai's all right. To me, Dakota's the weakest out of all the women, if we're bringing her in, too.
Yeah. But no, as far as your pick for Bayley goes, I definitely agree with that because right now she's kind of in like an underdog situation.
Yeah.
You okay, boss?
Yeah. Needed to get a good burp out. Number four, we have Crash Holly.
Oh, yeah. He is, and I remember reading an article back in an old issue of WWF Magazine back in 2000. They did a list of top five untrustworthy and top five trustworthy. And he came in at number one of the trustworthy.
Aww.
Because he, and they're like, this guy has been picked on by every person that works in this company.
Yes.
And he never held a grudge with anybody.
Yeah.
He was always the nicest guy, goofy as all hell. But in that King of the Ring 2000, when he beat Bull Buchanan in the quarterfinals,
yeah,
it's just like, oh my God. Like, people were thinking, they're like, could he actually go on? But then he had to wrestle Kurt in the semis. I still think he should have went against Kurt in the final.
You do?
Yeah.
Who went against Kurt in the final?
Rikishi.
Oh.
But Rikishi was also selling an arm injury.
Okay.
Yeah, Crash Holly, especially with the hardcore title. But even without, he was a, you always rooted for Crash.
Yeah.
You always rooted for Crash.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Next up, I have at number three, Spike Dudley.
He's another good one.
The greatest ECW underdog of all time, and also pretty good at WWE, too. You always root for Spike, the little gym teacher that became a wrestler. And his matches with Mike Awesome getting thrown into the crowd, his matches with Bigelow, his matches with all... Stop looking at the fucking screen. And his matches with all these big-ass dudes.
He's trying to prepare for the next one.
He's trying to see my whole list, man. It's supposed to be a surprise. And I thought he was a good underdog.
He's a very good underdog because when you're nicknamed the runt of the litter, which, by the way, most of the Dudley family was a fucking litter. They should have been put to fucking sleep as soon as they came out of Mama Dog.
Who are the other Dudleys? I know Sign Guy Dudley.
Sign Guy, Studley Dudley, which was just Joel Gertner.
Oh, yeah.
Big Dick Dudley.
That's me.
Dances with Dudley.
Dances with Dudley?
Yes. That was a thing.
I miss when there were more Dudleys.
Yeah. Can you imagine if Vince would have signed all of them? You would have been like, fuck that shit.
That would have been funny. All right. But yeah, I thought Spike was a really great underdog.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't necessarily a fan of them turning him heel because, to me, he was better as a babyface underdog.
He was. To me, it was a fun experiment still.
Yeah.
Next up, we have the second greatest underdog of all time. A lot of people think this guy's number one, Rey Mysterio.
Who the fuck do you have number one?
Just wait. We have Little Ray. I think he... they call him the ultimate underdog.
Yeah.
They call him one of the... I mean, he was a great cruiserweight champion. He was a great world champion working against big guys. Him and Big Show is always a classic matchup. Him and, like, guys that you really think he shouldn't beat. But there's something about the little bastard finds a way. And, yeah, I think he's one of the best of all time.
He is. And, like, I watched the WrestleMania where he won the world title today. And just, like... the moment, like, everybody, which kind of sucks because that Chicago crowd, like, at first, like, they were booing when he would attack Kurt Angle. But, like, when he won the title, everybody popped, and it was a cool moment. And it was always a cool moment when he was able to get, like, a big title win because he really was that ultimate underdog.
Yeah. And that was... And a lot of, like, you don't like the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view, right?
No.
But it is fun when he wins the title because you never expect it. And even at that time, you didn't think he was going to, like, Swagger was on a run. You didn't think Ray was going to pop out of nowhere and win the world title.
Yeah, I had no idea where the hell they were going with that. I actually thought Punk was going to win the damn thing.
So whenever he would come out of the nowhere and win, it would mean that much more because it's like, he's a little guy. He loses. And even, like, his world title reign was booked like shit, so... It makes it even, like, when he wins, it means something. That's the cool thing about a good underdog done well.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, when he, unfortunately, his world title run was booked like shit because he was losing every fucking match.
Yeah.
Except for the title matches where he was supposed to win, but that pay-per-view where he lost to Booker in the main event, that was, like, the worst fucking pay-per-view of all time.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right. The number one underdog of all time, Mick Foley.
He's a good one.
Mostly, to me, as Mankind.
Yeah.
If we're going to put any of the Foleys. Dude Love, kind of, too. Cactus is more even badass. But Mankind is one of the greatest underdogs of all time, and because he was the ultimate underdog of the Attitude Era. You had Rock, you had all baby faces, you had an awesome baby fit, and you had Rock as a good heel in some of the Attitude Era. You had a great heel in Triple H, you had Undertaker, you had Kane, but the underdog in like the, because to me, Attitude Era, if you go like as an overness, who's like the top guys, it goes Austin, Rock, Triple H, and then directly Mankind.
Yeah.
And Mankind, when he won that world title, and everybody knows about the butts and seats and Eric Bischoff giving away the results, but when he won the title, it meant so much. And it was so nice to see, because you never thought he would beat somebody like The Rock. But when he beat The Rock, it meant something. Especially in that empty arena match, too. Mankind was the ultimate underdog, and from him getting thrown off the cell, that moment, Mick Foley just became this lovable presence, and Mick Foley's baby boy. You're always rooting for him. Mrs. Foley's baby boy.
Yeah. Like, when he got thrown off the cell and then came back out, like, the next match because he was scheduled to do the run-in.
Yeah, he's a badass because he could take pain and just keep going.
Yeah.
And there was something that kind of admirable about that, and you respect that, and you want to see that guy be all right and make it home to his wife and kids. And that makes you root for him. You know what I mean, Jelly Bean?
I know what you mean, but like also, too, also stunts like that unfortunately put a bigger life insurance policy on him, because I'm pretty sure every time he told Colette, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm taking a big bump tonight, she would go to the lawyer. She'd be like, all right, up his policy.
Ha, ha, ha. But, all right. That was my top 10 underdogs. Did you like it?
I thought it was a very good list. Well, except for Daniel Bryan.
You did a good job, Daniel.
Thanks, Eric. It was all for you. Now, go ahead, Eric. It's your turn. It's time to book us a WrestleMania. Tell us what you think's gonna the match placement for night one and night two, and who you think's gonna win. How are you booking the show? Take over.
So there's only 10 matches so far that are announced, unless I missed one. I googled it, and there's only 10 matches that so far, and one of them is not complete because there's still a tournament coming going on with the tag team. Find the 15, and then there's a 15. So I added the teams who I think should be in it. The other two. So night one, the first match I start off was WrestleMania. Night one, I start out with the IC title, Sami Zayn versus Gunther. I think this is a good start for WrestleMania. Get the crowd going. You got two guys who can go. So, as much as I want Sami Zayn to win, to retain the IC title, I think a guy like Bron Baker should be the one that beat him for the title. And that's not here or there. But
I like that a lot, Eric. I really do.
Bobby. Huh?
I really like that.
Yeah.
I think that's
like
a good old
people want Sami Zayn to win. I don't think he's going to win. And I don't think he should.
Yeah, I don't. Well, because a lot of people are pissed off because they wanted Chad Gable to get the spot. Because they want Chad Gable to be the one to beat Gunther. They think that that's the better underdog story. They don't want a guy like Bron Breakker to be the one to end the reign. They want it to be an underdog.
Well, Sami Zayn's the better underdog story, and I like Chad Gable. I like Shorty G, but Sami Zayn was in the main event of WrestleMania last year. You got to have a good spot for him. This is a good spot.
Why didn't you just get louder?
You need to prove a point sometimes.
I mean, I agree with the fact that he just. I agree with the fact that Gunther should go over, because like
even though it would be nice because, you know, the guy's held the title for almost 700 days. Give the damn thing up. Yep. It's almost 2 years now. But I don't think that Sammy is the guy they're going to pick.
Yeah.
I actually think it's going to be Ron Baker, but it could be Chad Gable. I think they wait until SummerSlam to take the title off him. But anyways, yeah, I've gone through winning. Probably in about 15 minutes. I give it, give or take, 15-minute match to start the show would be great. Let them go 15 minutes, then Sami Zayn gets some offense in, and Gunther finishes it for a 1-2-3, obviously. And then the six-pack ladder match, so far then teams announced are obviously the tag team champions, Judgment Day, Damian Priest, and Finn Bálor. DIY, is Johnny Gargano and Ciampa. And you got R-Truth and Austin Truth with Miz and R-Truth. And you got the New Day with Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods. And then the two teams I added are the Street Profits, who are in the SmackDown tournament. So I think they're going to win. And then I have the Creed brothers from NXT. Are they still in NXT?
No, they lost. They're not going to be in the match.
Oh.
That's who DIY beat. That's who DIY beat to get in.
Oh, that's right. Well, my booking, I somehow put them in, so
because you guys don't watch
team,
the show.
Neither do you.
Well, we don't have cable.
I just put them in because I don't know any other packing to add right now. Unless you can think of one.
Okay, so it's Judgment Day's in, DIY's in, New Day's in, Awesome Truth is in, and then you have the two SmackDown teams that are going to get in. So it's either going to be Legado del Fantasma or Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate, or the Street Profits or Grayson Waller and Austin Theory. Because those two matches,
Street Profits,
huh?
And then Pete Dunne and what do you say?
Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate.
Okay, yeah, I'll have those two teams. So Street Profits and Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate. So I have this as a second match. I think this is going to be a fantastic match to be the second match of the show. Good, perfect spot to put it in, I think. So I have DIY going over, winning the tag team champions. I think it's their time. And it's would be a great WrestleMania story for them, just like last year with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, two popular wrestlers. You got two popular wrestlers with Ciampa and Johnny Gargano. So they've been the tag team for years, especially in NXT. So I think it's their time to win the tag team titles. So yeah, I have them going over. Can you guys agree with that?
Yeah.
No.
You don't want DIY to go over?
Well, it's not that I – well, here's the thing. I'm going with the story that they're telling right now. Uh-huh. And their story that they're telling is it's going to be Miz and Truth. And I'm okay with that because I would like to see Truth get a WrestleMania moment. And I like to see Miz get one too, because the WrestleMania moment he got was rained upon by the guy who now refers to himself as the final boss. You know, because when Miz Miz main evented that WrestleMania, Rock made sure it was all about him.
Doing now?
Yeah.
So, I mean, DIY, I'm sure a lot of people will be like, I'm sure there are a few people out there that, you know, probably do want them to win. And I've got nothing against them. Except for Gargano's wife is acting like a C word nowadays, but that's another story. She thinks she's Christian Cage with lady parts. But I think the better story is Miz and R-Truth.
That's fair. I wouldn't mind seeing them win either.
Yeah, as far as the legitimate tag team that's going to take you to the future of the millennium, it's DIY.
Until somebody takes over for Triple H and fires him. Remember, Gargano's already been let go from the company once.
But he's back.
Well, yeah.
He's back.
I know he's back.
I think DIY is one of the best tag teams on the roster, and them going over wouldn't be make me mad.
I'm not saying it would make me mad.
Especially
I just think
you look like Ciampa.
Because my beard is long?
Yeah. That's
okay. My beard is long and my head is bald. I almost said my bald is head.
That's cool. All right, go ahead, Eric.
So anyway, the third match on the card is brother versus brother, Jay versus Jimmy. And I have Jimmy going over. Wait, did I have the right brother going over?
That's the heel brother.
So you have the dog shit brother.
Yeah, I meant Jay going over.
All right. That's
yeet. Yeet.
I always get things confused. Sorry.
Well, yeah, it's not like you're
crazy. Yeah, so I have Jay going over. I think it would be a good match. One-on-one. Jay goes over. I hope there's no interference. I don't think there will be. I want to build them for interference with from their other brother. But
just give Solo some laxatives before the match goes on. He'll be stuck on the toilet. He won't be able to come out.
I do think they're going to put Jimmy over, though. Because everybody else is going to lose.
Yeah,
if Cody wins, Jay's probably going to have to lose.
Well, they can wait and make up their mind about Cody winning after Jay wins.
Yeah.
Just saying.
But in this scenario, my booking, I put Jimmy over. I put Jay over.
Okay.
And the next match on the card, the co-main event of the evening, the women's world title match between Becky Lynch and Rhea Ripley. I had Becky going over. I think it's been, 3 or 4 years since she held the title. So I think she's going over, especially because Seth Rollins is going to lose his title. So I think Becky gets another WrestleMania moment and rightfully so. And
she's going
over
this
for, huh?
You're having Becky beat Rhea?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the way this story is going, I think she's going to win the title and then probably lose it to Nia at SummerSlam. If they continue that story. But in this scenario, I have her winning the title. I think she's long overdue for another title run, but I think Becky pulled over in this situation. That's the way I went booking. The main event, the Bloodline versus Cody and Seth Rollins, the Boss versus Roman Reigns. I mean, the Boss and the final Boss, The Rock, and Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes. And that's wrong. I have The Rock and Roman Reigns going over. What do you guys think of that?
It's probably what's going to happen.
It's probably what's going to happen because there's no way that they're going to let it be a clean. Because if it turns out to be a clean match, they're going to find a way to screw Cody.
I'll be significantly more worried on night two about Cody winning the title if they win night one.
Yeah.
I'll feel a little better if Rock goes over on night one.
Yeah, because then, like, you can have all the interference and all that. And, like, I just – the only reason why I would want Cody and Seth to go over, like, if they were going to do, like, a traditional, like, match, just one-on-one match, and may the best man win and all that, that would be fine. But they haven't done that in years. All right, and you know there's got to be some fucking around and all that shit. So as much as I don't like the extra, like, bullshit, you know, with the useless Usos and the final bitch, I mean, final boss getting involved.
The final bitch?
Yeah. Like, as much as I don't want them to get involved, I'd much rather have them involved and Cody overcome that and win the match.
I love that he's calling himself the final boss. I think that's a great nickname for him. But, but I find it hilarious that he's night one. And he's the final boss.
Yeah.
And then Roman's night two.
Yeah. I just love how, like, he has all these great lines in these movies and always has super dialogue and never shuts the fuck up. And yet the only thing he could say for 25 minutes on Raw the other night was, look at you now.
It was a good segment.
It was a good segment, but after the 58th, look at you now, pick another sentence.
He said, look at you now, boy. And he said Mama Rhodes a couple times.
Yeah, Mama Rhodes an awful lot.
Yeah.
I think he's doing a great job.
Yeah.
He is, because he's really selling the match, because he's adding that extra layer that you didn't have last year.
Yeah. Cause, really good heel work.
Because Cody didn't get the shit beat out of him at all last year.
No.
Because it was all promos.
Yeah.
But Cody takes a beating from The Rock. He gets bitch slapped by The Rock. And he's got to go through all this shit. Like, that's how you create an underdog sympathetic babyface.
I agree.
Good. Night two. Ready?
Yeah.
The World Heavyweight title match starts out the show for night two. Drew McIntyre versus Seth Rollins for the World Heavyweight title. Seth Rollins winning. This might not be a great idea, but I think somehow CM Punk gets involved and costs Drew McIntyre the match. Then after the match, Damian Priest catches in the briefcase and wins the heavyweight title. That's why I had them lose the tag team titles. He's going to win the world title.
Okay.
So what do you guys think?
I don't hate it. I like the first part of it, and I think that's what's going to happen, because I think everybody thinks that it's a lock that Drew's going to win. But most likely, Seth's taking that fall night one. And you need to – Seth has been doing such good work, and you got to keep him strong. And I like him and Punk first before Punk and McIntyre. So, yeah, I like that, and I think Seth probably does go over. Yeah. I don't know. Damian does have to cash in at some point. But
do it the night after.
He's just not ready yet.
It happened. Seth Rollins did it.
He's not ready yet. And the main event is too populated. The main event's got too much good stuff going on.
No, do it the night after on Raw.
But you don't need him to win the title.
Or have him do it like they got a backlash in France, and nobody gives a fuck what goes on in France. So
I think he should cash in on Cody clean for a pay-per-view and get a pay-per-view main event spot for him.
Yeah, but the Money in the Bank's not meant to be clean.
He shouldn't win the title.
Oh,
you don't think Damian should win the title?
The main event is populated with really good stars right now and guys that can move the needle and fucking make good pay-per-view main events that people want to pay money to see. And there's no room for them. Especially once you get that IC title off of Walter,
or Gunther, whatever the fuck his name is, then you go directly into him and Cody. There's no room for Damian Priest. You can't, there's not even a thought of him cashing in on the Universal title because he's not big enough for it. And I'm not trying to be a dick. I like Damian, but he doesn't fit in with Cody and all them and everybody else yet. And so they would never do it. So now you're going to have him cash in for the World Heavyweight title that we've already called the B title numerous fucking times.
Yeah.
You need CM Punk to come back and challenge for it to mean something. So I think it's going to go out with a whimper and a wet fart. And even in that title picture, you have better guys. You have Seth, you have Drew, you have Punk when he comes back. Both title pictures are kind of populated right now.
Right. And another thing about McIntyre.
Have Jay.
Right.
Especially if he beats Jimmy, you're going to need to put some sort of strap on him. You either go into Gunther or you go into start getting him ready for a world title run.
Right. And you talk about Drew McIntyre. The guy still hasn't even signed a new contract yet. So we don't even know if he's staying. No.
He'll stay.
Oh, wow.
Trust me.
Yeah, he's staying.
I didn't do it.
Okay, you're gonna like it. You're gonna love this, Daniel. The second match on the card, LA Knight, versus AJ Styles. I have AJ Styles going over. I think he's going for a win, big win. I know LA Knight is popular, but they're about the same. He's over 42. See, this is hard because they're both fan favorites. But I think AJ Styles.
AJ not so much anymore.
Yeah.
People still love
him. This is hard. But I have Styles going over. I think he deserves that WrestleMania. He's due for a win, big win on the big
stage. What's funny about
he hasn't won a pay-per-view in like 2 years.
Right. The last time was against Balor. What's funny about him, about this whole feud is when LA Knight challenged him to a match at WrestleMania and AJ attacked him from behind. And said, I accept. And then LA Knight said, you know what? I'm going to hunt you down. And AJ said, well, if you're going to hunt me down, I'm not coming back to work until WrestleMania. So and as soon as he said that, as soon as he said, I'm not going to be on the next two SmackDowns or the next three SmackDowns, like, you're going to have to wait and get me at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I automatically thought, I'm like, he's going to go to his fucking house.
Yeah.
And he did. He went there last week.
Which is traditionally a heel maneuver.
Triple H was a babyface when he went to Randy Orton's house.
I know, but also, but still, it's a traditionally heel maneuver.
Yeah. And, like...
So who is the heel in this? I guess LA Knight?
No, AJ...
Okay.
AJ's technically the heel. But what was funny about that segment last week is they're rolling around on the ground... And because everybody in Gainesville knows who AJ is, like the Gainesville police, they arrested LA Knight.
Yeah.
And because AJ's wife, Wendy, was out there. She's like, arrest him. He's trespassing. So AJ goes out, goes over to the hood of the car and starts laying in shots.
Yeah.
On LA Knight. So the other cop there threw him on the hood of the car and went to cuff him. And AJ goes, what the fuck? This is my house. What are you doing? You're not arresting me. I didn't trespass. And then the cop goes, well, back up then.
That's funny.
And then LA Knight basically said, he goes, you better come to work next week or I'm coming back here.
That's funny.
Yeah. But that was so predictable. That was so predictable, though. When he said, all right, I'm not coming to work until WrestleMania. And it's just like, all right, LA Knight's going to his house.
Yeah, and this feud has kind of been...
Yeah.
For something that should probably have a little more magic to it, I think there's a lot more luster on a lot other matches. But WrestleMania is stacked this year, so you can't really blame it. But AJ, who's usually... I feel bad because I'm the biggest AJ Styles to me is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, but he's in a spot right now to where he's kind of lost in the shuffle.
Right.
And LA Knight is somebody that fans have really been behind for a long time and people think could make that main event run. And he's like another guy. Like, I put LA over Priest when it comes to like going for a title. So
yeah,
this is a predictable one because LA is going to beat AJ. I like Eric's booking and it would be a different twist, but also the people that like LA Knight would start bitching.
Right.
But you know, we'll see what happens.
That's why I went AJ, because I think LA is probably going to win.
Well, and you got to remember too, AJ Styles' WrestleMania debut, he loses to Chris Jericho, but then he beats Jericho the next night on Raw and gets himself a title shot.
Yeah.
So, like, just because sometimes at WrestleMania, the wrong guy does go over.
A lot of times.
But then they do the rematch right after, and then the right guy will go over.
Yeah.
Rocket Backlash.
Yeah.
But Cody can't finish the story of Backlash.
No, because like I said, nobody gives a fuck what happens in France.
Yeah. All right, keep going, Eric. We got to get out of here.
And I just had Seth Rollins going over, so I need a heel to go over in the next match. So,
okay.
What is the card is going to be? Babyface. I mean, sort of.
All right, get to it. We still have a whole other segment to do.
He's sweet.
The next match is WWE Women's Title Match, Bayley versus Io Sky. I have Bayley going over, obviously. I think this is her story to finish. And I think she goes over and she gets a big pop. What do you guys think?
I mean, I think she should go over.
Yeah, I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
Moving along to the next match, triple threat match for the U.S. title. Kevin Owens, Randy Orton versus Logan Paul. Here's a twist. I don't know if this is going to actually happen, but I think Randy Orton's going to go over and win the U.S. title. He's never won the U.S. title, right?
No, he has.
He beat Bobby Roode.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Yeah, okay. But I think Randy Orton wins. I think he gets... I don't think he'll hold the title for long, but I think he gets his, since he's been away for almost two years, I think he gets his moment at WrestleMania. What do you
I just want to see him RKO most of Logan's impulsive crew.
Yeah. You think he goes over?
I think they keep the belt on Logan.
Yeah, because I think there's more that they feel like Logan can do.
Okay. Now it's in the main event. I don't think it's going to happen, but this is the way I'm going to book it. I'm making a no-holds-bar for the WWE Universal title, and I'm going to have Stone Cold as a referee. So there's no shit going on, and he calls it down the middle, and Cody goes over, finishes the story. Pyro goes off in Philly at Lincoln Financial Field, and everybody in Philadelphia goes home happy. Cody Rhodes finally finishes his story.
I love it.
Yeah, hopefully that's the way it goes. I mean, I don't think Austin will be the special guest referee, but
it would be cool. If
I think he should. I think that's the only way
it
doesn't go down.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be good.
Yeah.
All right. That was very good, Eric.
Referee, I think no hard part.
Yeah, yeah. I thought you did a very good job, Eric.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Thank you. Thank you. I enjoyed doing that.
Yeah, you did good. It was nice having you ever raised. I think you booked a better show than Doug would have. So,
well, yeah, mine would have all been six-man tags.
All right. Our Hall of Fame class. Next week, we will be putting on suits, drinking champagne, and doing God knows what. And we're going to be doing the Hall of Fame, the first ever unscripted Hall of Fame. Let's see our nominations. I'm going to go first. Then Eric's going to go. Then Doug's going to go. We're going to put them in wrestling through the years, and we're going to let the good people vote. You ready?
Yep.
Yep. Just bring them loaded up. All right. I'm going to go through my whole list first, all right?
Yeah.
Well, I'll wait to do my headliner. My first female inductee. You ready?
Yep.
Yeah, go ahead.
I hope it's not the same as mine.
I have Victoria, also known as Tara in TNA. I think she's one of the more inventive women's wrestlers of all time. I don't think she gets enough credit for her work back in the day with Trish and the beautiful people in TNA, and I thought she's one of the better women's wrestlers of all time.
Okay.
Look at me, damn it. Now we have, for manager, I have Jimmy Jam Garvin's Precious.
Precious.
One of the best valets of all time.
Expecting that.
Well, to me, it's like her, Missy Hyatt, and who was the other one? Sunshine or some shit?
Yeah.
I thought that they were all three of the best.
Yeah, especially in
if you're a real territory fan, you would think that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you are, but a lot of people would. If you are a real, you know, if you really know that.
Bushwhacker, aren't you?
Well, acknowledge me.
I am acknowledging.
Every Reyes. Other time I stare at you, you yell at me.
Well, it's a showtime. Get off your phone, you nerd.
I'm writing down classic.
I have mine written down. You should know you were staring at the screen earlier.
I'm the one that's putting them in the group.
I'll send you a PDF. All right. Precious.
Okay.
Do you like her?
Yeah.
All right. You ready for my tag team?
Yes, sir.
I have...
Yep.
In the honor of Ole Anderson, and also as tribute and RIP to Ole, I got Ole and Gene, the Minnesota Wrecking Crew.
That's a pretty damn good.
They're one of the top tag teams of the territories. It's what made the Anderson name important. And then when you got Arn in the fold with Arn and Ole, and then the Horsemen, and the rest is history. But the Minnesota Wrecking Crew is one of the best tag teams in territory history. All right. Next up, we have MVP.
Oh, boy.
I think this guy is one of the more underrated. He's had one of the better work rates of modern times. I thought his run with the U.S. title in the mid-2000s was a lot of fun. The Ruthless Aggression era, stuff with Matt Hardy, but also his stuff when he came back and was a manager, and the Hurt Business and Bobby Lashley. I thought he did a lot of good stuff. And also his stuff in TNA was very entertaining too. Whenever MVP has a microphone in his hand, entertainment ensues.
Entertainment ensues. And when he led the Hurt Business, and the only thing I didn't like about him leading the Hurt Business is Bobby Lashley did not need his help to win matches. Cedric and Shelton did, but Bobby sure as hell didn't.
I liked him next to him, though, with the cane and everything. It worked. Damn it, it was over.
Yes, it did.
All right. Next up, we have Eric Bischoff, EZE, the Bish. I think one of the most underrated minds of professional wrestling, a guy that gets shit on way too much. I think he made WCW a big-time promotion. I think as a manager, kind of with Hulk Hogan and Hulk Hogan Stooge and the NWO and running the place, and especially when he came back and was Raw General Manager. I think he's one of the best on-screen figures in WWE history.
I think that's definitely the case. Like, after he left the general manager's position, it's just like, okay, now what?
Yeah, they never really filled that role. So I got Eric Bischoff. Next up, I have Mad Dog Vachon, AWA legend, one of the best territory workers. Luna's dad, right?
Yeah.
And
Luna's uncle.
Luna's uncle. And a straight, scary SOB. For a short fella, he looked badass.
Yeah.
For being short and bald like you, he was badass.
Yeah, I'm definitely not badass.
No,
badass.
You are a fat ass badass, my friend.
Oh, thank you.
You'll kick ass and eat Twinkies. Mad Dog, those two. Mad Dog Vachon, I thought, was a legend. And to main event my Hall of Fame draft class, I have Lex Luger, the total package. Somebody that should be in the WWE Hall of Fame right now and somebody who's one of the more underrated guys of all time. A former WCW world champion, and his matches with Ric Flair were amazing. His matches with Hulk Hogan and going against the NWO, I think he was one of the best guys that fought that fight. I liked the narcissist stuff in early WWF that he did. And even going against Yokozuna at WrestleMania. So Lex Luger, to me, far deserves to be the main event of a Hall of Fame class. Hall of Fame class. That's my list. If you don't like it, kiss my ass.
Well, we'll see if it's liked or not.
Well, they can kiss my ass if they don't like it. Eric, you're up.
Cool. Hold on. So I'll start with the women, right?
Yeah.
I have Gail Kim.
Very good.
One of the most underrated women's wrestlers, just like you said, Victoria. I think she gets underappreciated in WWE. She was underappreciated. She was probably the best TNA wrestler, women's TNA wrestler of all time. So she deserves to be in the WWE Hall of Fame. Next up, manager, right?
Yeah.
Teddy Long. Teddy Long was another underrated manager. I think he was a great GM. I think he deserves to be in Hall of Fame if he isn't already. And then the Midnight Express, my tag team. I don't think they're not in yet, right?
No. Well, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so
if
I have Midnight.
Because this is ours.
Yeah. The Midnight Express should be in the Hall of Fame, and they're one of the best tag teams of all time. If you ask Foxy, they're probably the best. So the guys I have are Daniel Bryan, one of the best. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame for what he did in WWE, especially this story, as we talked about earlier. Another guy I have is Christian.
Okay.
He had a great run as a tag team with Edge. And his work in TNA and the AEW right now has been fantastic. I think he's another underrated guy. I think he was underrated in WWE because of Edge being the more bigger name. Christian was a bigger name in TNA. Christian Cage, yeah. So, I mean, are we doing five, right?
Seven guys.
Oh,
so
seven guys.
You have two more guys. You have another guy, and then you have your headliner.
Okay. I have Chris Jericho, one of the best of all time. Still kicking it today, but he should retire. As much as I like Chris Jericho. He should retire. And most cases, this would be a headliner. But I'm going to say Batista is my one before the headliner. He deserves
to be in
the Hall of Fame.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Oh.
No, I don't think so, Doug.
So I had one more.
No, I think you're wrong. So he had, who was his woman? Gail Kim.
Gail Kim. Teddy Long, Midnight Express, Daniel Bryan, Christian, Chris Jericho, that's six. We need seven.
Okay.
Okay. So never mind. I have The Rock as the headliner.
Fuck Batista. That's funny. All right. Batista's a good headliner.
Yeah.
That's a good class, Eric.
Not bad.
Thank you.
All right, Doug. Finish us off here.
All right. My woman is Sensational Sherry, one of the most badass women of all time. She was a great manager, too.
Mm-hmm.
My manager is Sir Oliver Humperdinck.
You love Dink.
Yes. Anyway. All right. Tag team is Demolition.
Yep.
Then I got Kerry Von Erich.
Ooh.
Baron Von Raschke, Bam Bam Bigelow, and my headliners are Macho Man Randy Savage.
Damn good class, Doug. Yeah. I think that might win, but we'll
see. Nice job, Doug.
Thank you.
This was a lot of fun, guys. This was a blast. And
now,
what?
The thing is that each one of these will go in a poll, so there will be like 7 different polls run. So some of our class might make it, or like the class might be some of yours, some of mine, some of Eric's.
Oh, so it's not just the individual class. All the nominations are going to get put in, and we'll see who makes it in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
And we'll see everybody next week for the Unscripted Hall of Fame. It is professional affairs, so bring your suits.
Yeah. And if Kenneth, if you're listening to this, if you decide to join in, play along for once you putt.
So we'll see everybody next week.
And it's WrestleMania weekend next week.
WrestleMania weekend is going to be a blast. And we're doing our Hall of Fame for WrestleMania weekend. I love you guys. Goodbye. I'm done now.
Love you guys. Have a good
weekend. Yep. Goodbye.